need a while to digest this. I cannot understand where this comes from.
Chelsea have appointed Graham Potter as their new head coach.
He's off the mark in many ways.
Hey, welcome back to the Football Diary podcast. Thanks for joining us in another weird, unprecedented week of external events taking over the football calendar. Obviously, we have the death of Her Majesty the Queen Elizabeth II, which is one of them things that doesn't ever happen in anyone's lifetime, isn't it? The death of a monarch. So football's on hold for the time being, which is a shame, really. I think there's a real opportunity there for football to kind of pay some kind of tribute with the national anthem or something like that. But I'm joined with Miles anyway to discuss the football that has happened. Miles, how are you feeling about the situation with football cancelling this weekend? I mean, is it something you feel like is the right thing to do? Or it's a weird one, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really hard to judge because, as he said, it was 70 years. It's not something we ever anticipated. And it seems like since we've been doing this podcast, football has just been completely secondary to pretty much everything else. So it is a shame that the football wasn't there and able to pay a tribute in some way if that's what they wanted to do. Apparently, a lot of the fears were that that wouldn't be met with the most enthusiasm by some, and they were worried about that. I think it's really important that it gets back underway soon from a footballing perspective, purely because we've got such a congested fixture list this year already with the World Cup in the middle. And also, the WSL was meant to kick off this weekend, and there'll be a lot of people that were really excited for that off the back of the success of the Lionesses and might have got tickets, myself included. But if that gets delayed and then postponed and then all of a sudden the tickets aren't for a convenient weekend for someone, you might kill off some of that interest. And it's really important that you just keep that momentum going, I think, and get people there as soon as possible. But other events have taken place, I suppose, and we've got to be mindful of the fact that, of course, whatever you view of the monarch, we want to be respectful to the fact that someone's lost their life at the end of the day, and that is sad.
Yeah, it's a period of mourning officially for the United Kingdom. So obviously football respects that, and I kind of understand that in some ways. But yeah, a real shame. I had a packed fixture list to look forward to. However, a lot's happened still in the football world since we last spoke. So we've had European games for all of the European competitions. English teams having a mixed bag of results, it's fair to say, for those. But the headline, I think the one I want to start with, is the Thomas Tuchel sacking with Chelsea, which wasn't altogether surprising, was it? We've talked about how unhappy he seemed at Chelsea, despite, you know, having money to spend, arguable that it wasn't his signings to kind of take them into the new season. But yeah, they've been pretty ruthless with this one, haven't they? Todd Bowley swung the axe and Tuchel's gone with Graham Potter swiftly in his place. How are you feeling about Tuchel, first of all, before we move on to Potter, mate? What do you think to that move?
It's such an interesting one, actually, because, I mean, I said to you last week that I thought he wouldn't make the end of the season. Yeah. I didn't realise he wasn't going to make the end of the week at the time that I recorded. But Tuchel is an excellent manager. He has got a short fuse. That might be part of what makes him an excellent manager. We've seen plenty of fiery characters do very well in football. Look at Diego Simeone and his success at Atletico Madrid, because he's allowed to be that kind of character. And it seemed very clear that Bowley does not want to work with him in that manner. They obviously didn't see eye to eye over a few things over the summer. Cristiano Ronaldo being a massive one, apparently, that they had a bit of a fallout from. The recruitment strategy was pretty much all over the place. Bowley obviously cleared up when he got there, and Cech was removed. Granit Xhaka was removed. It was a really interesting summer for Chelsea that Tuchel clearly wasn't happy with. And as soon as results started to drop as well, I think that was just the excuse that Bowley was looking for to get his own man in. I'm surprised his own man is Graham Potter in some ways, but we'll come to that. As far as Tuchel goes, he's clearly upset by it. His statement came out, I think, today or yesterday. And he says he's really disappointed with it. And it's going to take a while for him to get over it, which I understand, because he was successful at Chelsea. Yeah, he was within penalties of two domestic trophies last year. Champions League winner, World Club Cup winner, whatever you call that tournament these days. It's a successful spell for him. And he answered a lot of critics over whether he would win trophies there. Did better than I think many people anticipated, yet find himself out of a job quite early in his time there.
It's strange, isn't it? We look back at the Roman Abramovich era and go, how ruthless that was, really, because he wasn't shy in getting rid of managers that had success, to be fair. But I don't think Tuchel's the kind of manager who I could see staying in this rut for very long. Yeah. You know, I think given a bit more time, and we say this about a lot of sackings, don't we? But Tuchel especially, he's an elite coach, and they're going to struggle to find that same kind of mentality in Graham Potter. This is completely new to him. He's worked his way up. So the pressure on him is going to be huge. And we'll talk about that, like you say, in a moment. But Chelsea swinging the axe for Tuchel so early in the season, has anything changed from Abramovich? What do we take from this in terms of the new ownership? Are they kind of looking at how they've done things in the past and going, do you know what, that's still the way we need to operate as a business? Because I think that seems like a business decision rather than a football one, in my eyes.
It's really hard to compare because you've got A, such a small sample size, and B, even though the sacking has come early, it's not unlike someone to buy a new club and then want to get their own people on board. It's odd timing. It's very, very odd timing. To have not done it sooner, during the summer maybe, and just said, okay, maybe I want to go a different way. We really appreciate what you've done at the club, but with new ownership coming in, we want to go in a different direction. That makes a bit of sense. But leaving him in place for the entirety of the summer, your opening weeks of the season, your first Champions League game, and then making the call, when really, all right, Chelsea's results hadn't been necessarily what you would have expected, and the Champions League game in particular seemed to cap that off. But it's clearly not down to the performances. It's clearly down to their relationship. If you look at Bowley's record in his other sports teams, he is a bit more loyal with his coaches. I think his coach at, is it a baseball team he's got or an NFL? I can't remember. But I read the other day that they've been in place for 7 years. So I don't necessarily think it is the same ruthlessness that Abramovich had. I think it's just him trying to really stamp his authority, which we saw him do all summer. He removed pretty much every member of staff there. But he's put a lot of trust in Potter. Potter's brought his entire backroom staff, everyone with him, even down to recruitment analysis, scouts. Adam Lallana is Brighton's manager now because no member of staff was left in the building, basically. So it'll be interesting to see what Bowley does there. Potter does seem more of a manager that you could build a legacy with necessarily, or a long-term appointment, than maybe Tuchel would be because of that erratic behaviour. Yeah. But it's yet to be seen whether he can do it at the same level, I guess.
I think Tuchel's the kind of manager that a lot of elite clubs look at, especially like just 12 months ago, and go, he's the man that we want, you know, because he's so good with elite players. And I think that's what makes him an attractive prospect, which for me is why this is such a difficult one to wrap my head around, because there's no one better out there and available than Thomas Tuchel. It feels a bit like when Dean Smith was fired at Villa. You know, there's no one better, and he was quite popular. And I think the fans have echoed, you know, the kind of love that the Tuchel has said he's going to really miss the place, and he feels welcome there. I think the fans would, from what I've read, have been really sort of sad to see him go, because he has done so much with the club in such a short space of time and guided them through a really difficult period in their history. So that for me is surprising. But in terms of Potter, though, seems an astute kind of recruit, really. It's not the kind of player manager I think I'd want in place of my club as it's going through such a big transition. And in some ways, I don't think Potter can really lose, can he? Because his stock's so high. And even if it's like a year and then they go, nah, it's not for us, it goes with a big payoff and still quite a big reputation, I think. So it looks like win-win, maybe, or is that too premature to say?
It's hard to judge. I think if this had been a year earlier, it would have been way too soon for Potter. And you wonder whether Brighton's successful start to the season has clouded their judgment on it a little bit. I think Potter is an excellent coach. I was on this podcast saying I wanted him to take over at Villa, because I actually feel like he probably could have done with that step before going to that top four club. I think it is a very big move for him. You're right, he can't really fail, because even if it doesn't work out for him, he can probably blame Todd Bowley for a while. It can be seen as that's how Chelsea operate. He'll probably land a big enough job. Lampard found himself at Everton after leaving Chelsea. So it's not impossible for Potter to still keep that good reputation. I'm surprised he took it, I think.
Really?
I am in some ways. Obviously, the money will appeal, not just what he's going to be paid, but the amount that he can spend. Definitely. But I would look at that club and think, am I going to... You've got to back yourself, I suppose, but is Potter going to have the time that he needs to implement what he needs to implement? At Brighton, for example, they finished last season very well. They've started this season well. It took him some time. They were playing nice football, but he never really got that end product from them. So it will take him time to implement those sort of systems at Chelsea. Will he get that time? He signed a 5-year deal, I think, or maybe even a 6. So there's signs of faith in him, which is really good. And I think it's great to see a British manager in a top four club and an English manager as well, because it's been a while since we saw, well, we've never seen success like that, really. Lampard had the Chelsea job in very different circumstances. But other than that, it's nice to see him take the step up in some ways. I wish it wasn't at Chelsea, I'll be totally honest. I don't really like Chelsea as a football club. Don't really like what they stand for and how they run. But yeah, it's a great opportunity for him in some ways. I think it might have come a little bit early, but he's a very good, he's a very, very good coach. If anyone's going to make it work for himself, it'll probably be him.
Well, his trajectory to where he is now has been, I think somebody else described it as like a football manager save, where he started literally from the bottom and worked his way up. And that kind of sums it up for me. He's kind of gone the correct path to get to the top. I think the jump from Brighton to Chelsea, albeit quite small in terms of like league position at the moment, is huge, isn't it? And I think that for me is an exciting prospect for him. But I think we're all rooting for him to do well with Brighton, even more now than what he was doing last season and what he looked like he was doing this season, because they're the underdogs, right? And he's sold a couple of his best players and we've gone, they're still fighting. Yeah. Whether they can survive losing their manager, they're arguably their most successful manager in a generation, is another thing that will remain to be seen. But I think it's really kind of gutting. I think Brighton could do better. I think they could be on the verge of European places this season if they played their cards right. So, to suddenly now sort of accept that they're going to be mid-table pretty much, aren't they? Let's face it. It's disappointing. Yeah, I'm gutted as a fan, as a neutral.
And that's one thing that I really wonder about this appointment, whether they needed to do it now. Yeah. Or whether they could have allowed Brighton to finish the season with Potter and brought him in the summer and just seen whether he could be successful at that top end for longer. Yeah. Because really, he's got one mid-table finish with Brighton under his belt that came under circumstances where the rest of the league sort of dropped off. That mid-table last season, if you remember, the majority of them, Palace, Wolves, Villa, were all on the beach towards the end of the season. And that's when Brighton really stepped up. Potter is... He's not managed an English club in the Europa League or even the Conference League, and is going straight into a club that will have aspirations of genuinely challenging for every trophy they're a part of now. And that's a lot of pressure. I do really rate Graham Potter. I think he's an excellent coach. Obviously, that's why I wanted him at my club. But it will be really interesting to see how he handles that transition, because it is a completely different job now. Look at Arteta, for example. Arteta went straight in at Arsenal and he's doing very well now, but it took him some time. Now, he already had some favour at the club because of his time there. Really, what links do Graham Potter and Chelsea have that will give him that time? I'm really interested to see how it plays out. I hope for his sake it's successful to a degree. I don't want Chelsea to do well, but I do want to see him do well because he seems like a very, very good coach and we need more of them in England, really.
Yeah, I think the pressure's on him from day one, I think it's fair to say. Mm. I hope not. I hope he does get the kind of luxury of time that a six-year contract or a five-year contract would probably suggest. But knowing Chelsea, I doubt that's the case. But again, if the new owner is kind of looking for a character that matches his outlook and what he wants from a team on the pitch, then maybe it might work and maybe he might give him the time. And clearly Tuchel wasn't that person, but maybe Potter might be. You never know.
The only thing that I would say about it is, and look, he's probably made the right decision in some ways, but Bowley is not a football guy. He's pretty much removed all of the football people from the club and is making decisions on his own. And it doesn't surprise me that he's gone out and got the manager in the best form right now. In the short space of time that Bowley has been in the Premier League, Graham Potter, you'd argue, is probably the best manager at his level. So the small sample size that he's been able to take stock of, I want to know who's advising him on these things, because Chelsea's strategy over the summer suggests that no one is advising them on them.
Yeah.
They've just gone and spent big money this window and removed the manager short after. They brought in Aubameyang on deadline day to reunite him with Tuchel. He's played 60 minutes with him. They've sacked him. Mm. They've brought Cucurella from Brighton, and now the Brighton manager is there. Was this always the plan? I can't work it out whether Chelsea know what they're doing or they're just kind of stumbling their way through and hoping for the best. You've got a feel for Billy Gilmore in all of this, who's just left Chelsea for Brighton because he was really inspired by Graham Potter and wanted to play under him. And now he might have had a chance if he'd stayed. And you have to really feel for Aubameyang. But more than anyone, I do feel for Tuchel, because I don't know where his next job is now. where does Tuchel go from here, really? What's his... I think his stock has probably gone up at Chelsea, but I don't know what job's going to become available that he would be attracted to now. It's going to be a while.
I think he might go back to Germany if Dortmund came calling again. I think that might be an attractive prospect for him. Come home.
Maybe. I think he might be beyond Dortmund right now because Dortmund don't have the resources to compete for the league title and the Champions League like Chelsea do or like PSG do, obviously. So that would be almost a step down for him.
But he spent a few years of not feeling the love is what I'm trying to say. Maybe he just needs that.
Yeah.
He's quite an emotional manager, isn't he? Maybe he needs the environment around him that makes him feel like he's wanted and needed again. You know, PSG was a disaster for him and Chelsea so far has been fairly similar, hasn't it?
It's really funny because actually Tuchel is known as being quite antagonistic with his boards and it doesn't surprise me that he's fallen out with Boehly. But when you look at last season, he handled the situation around Abramovich very, very well. And at a time where he probably could have jumped ship under uncertainty, and there was a lot of talk that United were looking at him, he stuck by him.
Yeah.
So it's really, I think it's very telling that so quickly he's out of the door. I don't know. Do you think Potter's going to be successful? What do you think?
I think this season's a bit of a write-off. So if they're expecting Champions League qualification this season, I don't think they're going to get it. I think they've got to look at just consolidating a top six place. I mean, even with Tuchel in charge, we were saying that there's a good chance they could slide out the top four, didn't we?
And I think
that kind of has been heightened now, I think, because he's going to find his feet. It's going to take him a little while. There'll be a period of adjustment. Managing elite players is not easy. And I think that's what Potter's biggest hurdle will be, because so far he's got the best out of players that have been his level or people that he's plucked from teams below his level. So they've listened to him. His kind of way of looking at football might not suit the players that he's got now, and he's going to take a while to figure that out. He might even need his own transfer window to get his own players in as well, because there's a lot of those players that just won't suit his system. So many question marks, so many what ifs, so many trial and errors. I think that he's going to lose a few games, he's going to struggle a little bit, and I just hope he has the patience that someone of his talent kind of deserves, really, because he could be brilliant. He's on the cusp of greatness, and like you say, as an English coach at the top level of the English game as well, that's a rarity, isn't it? It really is.
Yeah,
too rare.
I was quite surprised, if I'm totally honest, that it was immediate.
Yeah, it was.
Gone. Potter is the man. It wasn't even talked about. I know there's not a great deal of people available right now. Really, you talk about Pochettino, potentially Zidane. It was very clear this is who we want. Chelsea have obviously been thinking about it, I suppose. But yeah, I want to see Potter do well. I don't want to see Chelsea do well. So it's a bit of an awkward situation. The only other thing I would worry about is that Brighton were the XG kings, but not very clinical. And now he's in charge of Chelsea, who their only striker is Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, who's 33, very clinical in the Premier League, has done well. One injury and then all of a sudden, where does Potter get his goals from at Chelsea is the only thing I would worry about. And also, he's got a brand new defence to organise too.
I think the forward line will be something, the kind of talent he's never really had, with no disrespect to Brighton at all. I think even using Raheem Sterling as a false nine, I think he could buy into Potter's ways, I really do. So I don't think the attack will be the problem. It'll be the defence, I think, more than anything. Because his kind of football is not really suited to ageing legs, and he's got Thiago Silva still in the back line. Whether he plays a back five again, or a back three with wing backs like Tuchel used to, I have no idea. It's a bit of an unknown quantity, isn't it, for everybody?
That whole defence is an unknown quantity, and it has been since they signed them, and that's the problem. And I'm sure we'll go on to talk about the Tuchel's last game, but that was the thing that did it, really. That defence just doesn't look organised yet. It doesn't look like the kind of defence we expected from a Thomas Tuchel side. No. Granted, it's very, very new. Fofana and Koulibaly should be a fantastic partnership. They put Aspilicueta in there as well for some experience, but there's a lot of work that needs to be done at Chelsea. Weirdly, the postponement at the weekend, and if it happens again this weekend, will benefit Chelsea. It will give them almost a very mini pre-season with Graham Potter for him to try and talk through that defence. But you're right about someone like Thiago Silva, Aspilicueta. They were performing beyond what we expected of someone of their sort of age and experience under Tuchel. Will they then respond to Graham Potter in the same way? Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm not so sure. Anyway, reflecting on that Champions League defeat by Chelsea to Dinamo Zagreb, in Zagreb as well. The team seemed to lack energy and enthusiasm for me. And that's probably coming from the coach, because he clearly wasn't happy the last few games. Chelsea have not looked their best really since probably the turn of the year, really, like back at the new year for 2022. And maybe that's just seeped through to the playing squad, but that performance was totally abject, wasn't it? And totally deserved as well.
Yeah, it was. I think Chelsea are in such a weird position right now, because we're talking about the transition they've got at boardroom level, in the dugout, but even the playing staff. It's not been consistent for a little while now, and that will really make them struggle. You've got to look at the success of some of the players that have left, like Werner's hit the ground running back in Germany. Lukaku looks really strong again in Italy before he picked up his injury, of course. And in this game, their newer recruits just haven't settled yet, and that did cost them. They will settle in some way as long as a system can be put in place, and maybe that will be Potter's biggest task. But you're right, I think the writing was on the wall before this game, and fair play to Zagreb for being able to unpick them when they did.
Yeah, it was the final nail in Tuchel's coffin, which is a shame. I'm sure Tuchel won't be short of suitors going forward, to be fair, but what club he goes to next will be interesting. Juventus might be looking for a coach sometime soon. They were terrible in the final of Champions League fixtures as well. But focusing on the English teams, can we talk about Liverpool for a moment?
Yep. Yeah. Shame Chris couldn't make this one, isn't it?
I know. Yeah, he seems to be ducking all these terrible games that Liverpool are playing lately. But in a nutshell, what did Liverpool do or not do to lose 4-1 to Napoli? Because, I mean, Napoli were brilliant. They were absolutely fantastic to watch. They were clinical in the counter. They picked apart a really terrible defence with Joe Gomez, I think we highlighted beforehand as the real issue in their back four at the minute. But he's giving Van Dijk nightmares as well. Like, he's really not struggling to, he's struggling to cover him as well. So 4-1 didn't flatter Napoli at all. They could have had more.
No, it could have been way more. Yeah, it's, I mean, they missed.
Dive straight in there. What did you make of it?
Obviously, Osimhen missed the penalty. They had a good couple of other chances, Napoli, to make it more. And Liverpool just looked absolutely absent from the game. Now, I love an opportunity to bring this up. I've seen Van Dijk and Gomez play centre-back before. They go terribly wrong when Villa managed to stick seven past them. They clearly are not a very good pairing. Trent Alexander-Arnold, I'm bored of saying it, is a terrible, terrible defender, and has proven that over and over again at the moment. Such a creative player, an incredible attacking talent. His defensive capabilities are shocking, and it was highlighted so many times in this game. The amount of times Napoli broke and he was just ball watching, and we've seen that over and over again. Gomez just couldn't run the read the runs of the Napoli forwards, or even from midfield. Everyone's seen that it's been thrown about as many times as possible, the clip of Anguissa's 1-2 for his goal, and how three Liverpool players just stand and watch the most telegraphed pass I've ever seen. Not one of them reacts. They just leave that space. We've seen Trent get beaten on the right-hand side, or Napoli's left, and just watch the winger keep going. He stays back. He doesn't try and get back and cover. He just watches it. Because not one of them seems to have any defensive awareness at the moment. And that might be without Fabinho around, or it might be because Van Dijk's form isn't really where we expect it to be. But they look completely abject at the back. And Napoli are building something slowly. Bear in mind, they've lost some really big players, Napoli, and some big attacking players. We don't have Mertens. We don't have Insigne. Osimhen went off injured in this game as well. But they still looked so much sharper than Liverpool. And when was the last time we could say that? A team looks sharper than Liverpool. I do wonder whether it's just getting to that time with Klopp. I don't know.
It's a little bit looks like we have to reinvent ourselves.
I think it's not just Klopp. It's a few players in the team as well. And I think we've touched on the midfield many times, as much as we've touched on Trent's terrible defending generally. But yeah, the midfield looks bereft of energy, I think, definitely. Harvey Elliott's been really good. He's kind of carried the midfield to an extent. And Luis Diaz as well, I think, has really brought the energy. In fact, he stopped them from getting embarrassed, I think, by his attempts to try and get Liverpool back in the game.
Yeah.
But the rest of the forward line even don't look anywhere near form. And they're missing Sadio Mane, aren't they? Let's face it.
Massively. What I would say, two players you've highlighted are the two newest ones to Liverpool. I think this is Klopp's seventh year now.
Yes, it is.
Right? Yeah. And a lot of those players have been there for five, maybe. Yeah. Last season, they played 64 games at a very high intensity. Huge pace needed, great pressing, on the ball. It's tiring as a system. And we've seen this before. We've seen this when Mainz got relegated under Klopp. We've seen that crash that he had at Dortmund in his seventh year there as well. And I do wonder whether players like Salah, Firmino, Van Dijk, who have been there much longer and are getting closer or beyond 30 now and have been playing in that system for a long time, playing game after game after game, I think it might just be catching up on them now, and maybe it's time to refresh things slightly. Now, obviously, Diaz has come in and Nunes has come in. That should refresh it slightly. But when the midfield behind them is so weak, they aren't able to do things unless they do it for themselves. And then it doesn't matter what the attacking players are doing whilst the defence is so absent. They need Joel Matip in there at the moment. He's far better than Joe Gomez. And I genuinely think with Liverpool's midfield the way it is, they have to look at when he's fit, getting Calvin Ramsey in at right back and moving Trent into the midfield. I think that solves so many problems. And I've said it before, and I've talked to Liverpool fans about it who think I'm completely wrong, but evidence would suggest I think there's an obvious change needed. And if they don't do something soon, maybe Klopp will get to a point where he thinks, I don't know where I'd take this team. I'm cautious of this because it's what? It's 10 games into the season in all competitions, and they could turn around and win every trophy available to them, and I'll look like an idiot. But I don't know, the signs are there. I would be worried.
I 100% agree the signs are there, and they've been there for 6 months, I would say now, prior to the season ending as well. They limped to the finish line in the Premier League last year, didn't they? And it just looked like a collective, again, lack of energy, like you said. And it is really telling when the youngest, newest players are breaking through and providing the most spark, I think, for creativity. The problem we've got is he spent a fortune when he first started on the back of selling Coutinho, and that was the biggest kind of kickstarter they needed to sort of buy the players they've got now. 7 years down the line, you haven't got that kind of money to turn around that kind of team. So to replace these big names that are sort of fading, all the players that have never really made the grade in the first place, like Joe Gomez, I know it's early days and I know he's got potential, but he's having a shocker and I don't know how he's going to recover from it. But financially, they're not in a position to rebuild a team, are they? So maybe Klopp looks at this and goes, I've done all I can. I mean, what more can he do? He's won everything.
Do you know what's really telling as well? You're right. They aren't in a position to keep up financially with the likes of Man City, Man United, Chelsea. They're spending, but they did spend big money on Darwin Nunes. So they need that to come good. Now, I think it will. I think Nunes is a very, very good striker.
Yeah.
Letting Mane go, you have to ask a lot of questions about that. Salah obviously is a fantastic footballer. I wonder if for Klopp's system as a team unit, Mane would have been a better player to keep. I also think that Liverpool's recruitment strategy has been so clever since Klopp got there. And they've been very, very clear on their objective of they're only going to bring in the right player. And if the right player is not available, they will bring in no one. Because of injuries, they brought in Arthur. Arthur is not a Liverpool player. And that, to me, starts to say there's a bit of desperation here. We need anyone. And I wonder whether that could be the start of Liverpool's decline. I'll be interested to see it. And now I can't stand Liverpool. You know, I can't. For a footballing point of view, they are a wonderful team to watch. And Klopp is a fantastic manager. So it would be a shame to see that kind of legacy, not legacy, but that kind of performance level drop and not be around anymore in some ways. But I wouldn't be surprised either.
Yeah.
And I don't think you can blame them in some ways. 64 games in one season and getting past 30. Yeah, you probably are a bit tired. But the defensive basics that they're missing, you can blame them for that. And it was terrible.
Yeah. I think psychologically, we're kind of underplaying the effect of getting that close to winning the top two titles that they really wanted and losing them to barely anything, really. That must be absolutely heartbreaking for all involved. 100%. Even Klopp, who's like the master motivator, must have felt the wind out of his sails completely from that. Because winning two domestic cups for most clubs is great. That's brilliant. As a Man United fan, I take two domestic cups right now. But for Liverpool, you know, that's a pretty big consolation prize, isn't it, really, from the tantalizing, the close reality of a Champions League and a Premier League and a whole quadruple within the same season. So, bit of a come down there. I don't know what they do to kickstart their fortunes, really, because is anyone going to leave? Is anyone going to make them big money in the transfer market? If they put, for example, Van Dijk up for sale, I don't think they struggle to sell him. So maybe they need that kind of big sale to kickstart a whole new era of players like they did with Coutinho back in the day. Is that a lack of ambition for them, or is that just reality of where they're at?
I think because of the age profile, there's only one player that they could sell that would bring in the kind of money that Coutinho did, and that's probably Alexander-Arnold. Particularly when Barcelona have been supposedly looking at him for a while. They don't have a permanent right back, really. They've got Hector Bellerin in for this season, which is an interesting signing, actually, one we didn't get to talk about. They obviously don't believe in Sergiño Dest. Maybe that's one that Liverpool might consider. It would be a shame because he does bring so much to that team and his creativity is incredible. But if you could get over 100 million for Alexander-Arnold, could you then completely refresh the majority of your team? And would you trust Klopp and the recruitment team that are at Liverpool to basically rebuild? Because they've done it once before, like you say. So something to maybe consider. But it's early days in the season. Like I say, they'll probably prove us both completely wrong. We'll be back on the podcast in 3 weeks talking about how Liverpool are going to win 4 trophies this year.
I think we're quick to press the disaster button, aren't we, with a lot of teams? Yeah. But the come down has been pretty stark for Liverpool lately.
Yeah.
So if they can reverse this slide, then fair play. You know, he deserves all he can get.
And just quickly, I know you've already said it once and I've mentioned it briefly, but we spent so much time focusing on Liverpool. Just have to say, Napoli were outstanding in this game. Victor Osimhen, it was a real shame to see him go off, but he was unplayable at times. Simeone came on and got his goal, which was really touching. But they just looked absolutely brilliant, didn't they? It was really encouraging performance for them in a really interesting group, actually. When Ajax have beaten Rangers 4-0 as well, all of a sudden it's really open. It's going to be an interesting group.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Champions League debuts going well, you talked about Simeone. Richarlison, how about that for a Champions League debut? Two headed goals, really, as well, to rescue Spurs from a very, very tricky game against Marseille. And Spurs 2-0 winners, and Richarlison, the game changer. Who'd have thought? He's been on the fringes for the most part of the start of the season, but he came good when they called upon him, didn't he?
Yeah, and I think you can consider this Spurs winning the first North London derby of the season, can't you? With Guendouzi, Tavares. Unfortunately, Alexis Sanchez was suspended for the game, so he couldn't play because he got sent off for Inter Milan last season, I think, or maybe even bookings, I can't remember. But yeah, Spurs would be really happy with the win. Would it have come without the red cards? I don't know. Ember just a bit of silliness. Last man, you're always going to get penalised for that. And really, once Marseille went down to 10, they just couldn't hold on anymore. And Richarlison, I still don't know what I make of him, whether I think he's as good as he thinks he is, or whether I think he's as good as the Brazil manager thinks he is, or the price tag on his head is. I don't know. It'll be a really interesting season for Richarlison, let's say that. So to get two goals in the Champions League and to get off the mark after that embarrassment of scoring the goal against Fulham and taking your shirt off and getting booked early for it to be disallowed. Ask Arkadiusz Milik about that, whether it could have been worse. I hope you saw Juventus last night as well. Absolutely ridiculous getting sent off for that. But yeah, a good win for Spurs. That's what they needed, just to get that monkey off their back. First Champions League game back. And people always ask questions of Conte in the Champions League too. So he'll be happy to get a win.
They do. I think Conte prefers that as well. He likes kind of trying to prove people wrong. So I'm really curious to see how Spurs do generally this season, not just in the Premier League, but the Champions League as well, whether they can compete. Yeah. Because they have come very close in the past under Pochettino, then went through that huge slump that they're coming out of. So the Conte rebuild seems like it's progressing well. Whether any of the Spurs fans get ahead of themselves and think they can sweep the board or challenge for the title, we'll see. But they need to be realistic, really, and sort of aim to consolidate top four, don't they? And go on a good run in the Champions League, that'd be good. A few of the signings as well that Conte's made have come good as well. I think Bissouma played okay. I think Perisic was dangerous as well.
It's great. And it's really interesting, actually, because Spurs have got such a combative midfield now and very defensive-minded midfielders. And we were talking about how they kind of lack a creative midfielder and maybe we'd see Kane take that role. But actually, what seems to be Conte's system is playing those midfielders that can control the middle of the park and then Perisic get forward and be the creative player. And then that allows one of them to come in and step in and cover him at left back. It's really interesting, actually, to see. But Perisic looks great, and we knew he would be because he's such a Conte player.
Moving on to, as you say, the other team in Manchester who are playing in the Europa League. Cristiano Ronaldo in the Europa League still doesn't not look weird, does it? But they succumbed to a 1-0 win. 1-0 win. That's thought wishful thinking. They succumbed to a 1-0 defeat to Real Sociedad in controversial circumstances with a handball given and an eventual penalty for that as well. That, I think, contentious isn't the word. What did you make of the handball that was given?
It's the ridiculous change in the laws, isn't it? Last season, that wasn't a penalty.
No.
This season, it is. If it comes off his body and then hits his arm, it doesn't matter. He jumps in for a block. And if you are making that sort of challenge, I think you would say it was a natural body position. Because you wouldn't jump like this towards something. You do have to steady yourself. He wasn't bigger in any way. His arm was still in his body. It was slightly raised up this way, but the ball was going straight at him. If his arm wasn't there, it would just hit his chest. So I don't think you can argue that it was deliberate. He got booked for it as well, didn't he? Or that's was it mad. Fernandez that got the yellow? One of them Fernandez did for the melee. Yeah. It wasn't a penalty. But United probably should have won this game anyway. They had chances. Ronaldo obviously had the ball in the back of the net at one point, but it was offside. So that's unfortunate. United really should be winning these sort of games. I think it's worrying that they bring in Ronaldo and Maguire and they lose their winning run. I'm not saying that it was down to those two individuals, but just from a morale standpoint and continuity, it doesn't look good, does it? And it will knock some confidence. But Sociedad are an interesting side. They're not necessarily the best team in Spain, but they've got some interesting players. I was really interested by the idea that Sorloth is there now, obviously. Yeah. We know him from Crystal Palace and he wasn't great. And then he went and had that amazing spell in Turkey. Didn't really work for him last season. And now he's got this new chance. Kubo looks brilliant. They finally got him permanently. So that's really interesting. And Brias Mendes, who scored the penalty, looked really tidy. Looked just like Bruno Fernandes. He's basically his twin. And even took the penalty in a very Bruno Fernandes way. But I thought he played really well. And of course, David Silva just rolling the years back. He looked class as always. So. Yeah. I don't know if I'd worry about it as United. They would have wanted to get off to a winning start. They need to get something from this tournament, I think. They really should be one of the favourites for it. So, I don't know. It's a difficult one to call.
I think they're still in a phase of trial and error against different opposition, aren't they? Different styles of play. And like, he's trying to rotate his squad, I totally understand it, but it's telling what they put Lindelof, Maguire back in the team, Ronaldo back in the team, and they have three shots on target, and that's it. Yeah. You know, should have been much more than that. But either way, Europa League represents an opportunity for United, I think it's fair to say, to get back in the Champions League. So I'm sure they'll be taking it seriously. Arsenal too, they won their game and with pretty much a second string team as well, won 2-1, which was deserved as well. A few players staking their claim in it and a team that's actually performing really well this season. Who do you think caught the eye for Arsenal?
It's interesting, isn't it? Because we did see a bit more of the depth that Arsenal have. Albeit against very weak opposition, they should really be dispatching that sort of side more than 2-1. But Nketiah got his goal, which will be really good for him to get off the mark this season, because obviously he signed that big contract, got the number 14 shirt. He looks like he's bulked up quite a bit as well.
He
looked like a different person. And then they signed Gabriel Jesus, and all of a sudden the guy that you thought was going to be their main forward is not their main forward. So good for him to get a goal. Fabio Vieira is a player that I'm really excited by, and I think he could do with hitting the same weights that Nketiah has, but I think he'll do well in the Premier League. And Marquinhos getting a goal. I don't think he will have expected to have even started that game, really. So a really good opportunity for him, and he took it well. So nice for Arsenal that they've started with a win and been able to give some more of their squad players a run out, and interesting to see where they go from here, really, in this tournament.
Yeah, I think their group looks quite favourable as well. I think it's Bodo Glimt, who you should never really underestimate in this competition.
Yeah.
PSV, so they should definitely be thinking this competition is something they can go far in, definitely. They've got to the final in it before, haven't they? So they've got pedigree, if you like. But yeah, it's an opportunity for them.
Yeah, and that European trophy has always eluded them. So it would be a really big thing for them to get that. And for Arteta as a manager to win it for them would be huge.
In the Conference League, West Ham, so off Steaua Bucharest 3-1. They went behind as well. So showed some resilience to get back in the game. I think they look really talented. They've got some really good players in their team. They've made some good signings. Declan Rice seemed to be playing more like Declan Rice would normally in this game. Emerson scored his first goal in his first appearance. Bowen looked really dangerous. Lucas Paqueta played as well. So they looked like a bit of a breath of fresh air, but again, albeit against fairly weak opposition. What did you make of, what do you make of their chances this season in this competition?
I mean, West Ham have to be the favourites for this competition just based on their financial power more than anything. If they can sign the likes of Scamacca and Paqueta, they should be really competing for this. I thought it was very telling that it took them until the 70th minute to even get into the game properly. And it came from Bowen, Antonio and Rice. So yes, they've signed big players. They've brought in Corne, Scamacca, but it was Antonio that came on and made the difference again. They really need to find some consistency, but a good win all the same. Good for them to get off the mark, really.
Needed. Definitely needed. Mm. They've had an up and down start to the season, haven't they? So I think momentum is the key word here in a difficult slog 100%. Of a season. And we talked about West Ham trying to find the competition to focus on as well, because there's such a thin squad really compared to most, although they have bolstered.
Yeah.
I think this might be the competition that David Moyes probably goes for more, don't you think?
It should be in some ways, because they really could do something in it, and they don't look like they can in the league right now. The only thing I would worry about is where they could end up in the league if they don't pay a bit more attention.
Yeah.
Here's my new bold claim. So last week I told you I didn't think Tuchel would make it to the end of the season. I wouldn't be surprised if West Ham and David Moyes parted company by the end of this season as well. I don't think he'll be the next one to go by any means. We know that Rodgers, Gerrard and Lampard are in a bit of a race for that. But I wonder whether we're already starting to see the signs that David Moyes' successful spell at West Ham might be starting to dwindle a little bit. And the fact they've spent big money on some players will up the expectation, but Moyes has never really done well with that. He's always done better with kind of British homegrown players that he's been able to nurture. I wouldn't be surprised if West Ham maybe look to move on in the summer, let's say.
Okay. Well, on the flip side, it might be these new signings take West Ham to the level that David Moyes always aspired to be at, you know? That's the narrative you could be pushing.
I think they will, but I don't think it'll be with David Moyes at the helm.
Wow, okay. Well, I don't know who they go for at their level either, but that's a story for another day.
We'll see.
Can you kind of pick some kind of hero and villain of the week for me? What have you got in mind?
I think we've covered them. I think the hero of the week, and I can't believe I'm going to say this because he's the most unlikable man in football, is Richarlison. Because to score twice on your Champions League debut is one thing, but for such an unlikable person to then be seen crying in the crowd with his mum and dad was oddly kind of touching, I don't like to admit. So good job, Richarlison. Well done.
I think fair shout as well for Giovanni Simeone as well, because similar circumstances, right?
Yeah. Yeah, his little tattoo that he's had since he was 13, which is the most Simeone thing I've ever heard, that he'd let his son get a Champions League tattoo at 13. Hilarious.
That is
brilliant.
In terms of villain, then, who have you got in mind for that?
The Liverpool defensive coach, or maybe just Joe Gomez. It was just shocking, wasn't it? And we're seeing one of the best British sides of the last 25 years get absolutely battered. So it's a bit sad to watch.
Yeah, that's true. And in terms of the goal of the week, what stood out for you?
I really struggled with this one, actually. There wasn't one that immediately came to mind. I really like Marquinhos' finish for Arsenal. It was a nice counter-attack from Arsenal, and actually he put it away really, really well. So maybe that one would get a pick from me.
Brilliant. Good choice. Anything else to cover before we go, Miles?
Yes, I'm lumping something on you now. So anyone under the age of... How old are you again, Mike? Under your age, let's say, will be really excited by the release of the new FIFA that's coming in a couple of weeks. And today, FIFA dropped their top 23 players for the new game. Now, I know, Mike, you're not much of a FIFA player. Is that correct?
Not anymore, no.
Did you play it last year?
I haven't played it since about 2013, mate. Seriously.
Fantastic. Okay, so I'm going to quiz you on something then. So the top 23 players came out. What I'd like to do is see if you can name the top 10. I'm going to give you 15 guesses, and we'll see if you can guess who FIFA think are the top 10 players in the world right now. And hopefully, in post-edit, you can put in some correct or incorrect noises for every time you get the wrong or right guess, shall we?
Right.
So, 15 guesses. Can we get our top 10?
Right. I'll probably start with PSG, because they've got some obvious ones. Neymar.
Okay, so Neymar is not in the top 10. He is number 11, typically.
Ooh, okay.
So there's one of your five that you can get wrong, gone.
So Mbappe, of course.
Mbappe is the cover star of FIFA and is ranked number three at 91 rated.
Okay. Virgil van Dijk.
Van Dijk is number seven, so he is in the top 10 as well.
I can see FIFA putting Trent up there as well.
Trent is always very high on it, and I think last year he was 87 rated, but he is not in the top 23.
That's reassuring. I'm glad that's the case.
Yeah.
is Messi still there?
Messi is number five. So this is the lowest he's ever been.
Yeah, yeah. But I'm guessing Cristiano must be there as well then.
He's number eight. So that's the lowest he's ever been too. But you've got Ronaldo. Good.
Yeah. Blimey. Okay. Do you know what? Benzema's got to be there after the year he's had.
Number one, Karim Benzema. Best player on FIFA. 91 rated along with Mbappe.
Okay. Lewandowski.
And he's number two, also 91 rated.
Vinicius Jr.
Vinicius Jr. has gone up massively on FIFA this year, but is not in the top 23.
Okay. Surprising.
But after the year he had, he probably was in the best for the year he had. But maybe they're thinking about potential or something else.
Maybe optimistic. So you've got Bruno Fernandes.
There are some United players. He's not one of them, I'm afraid. So you've got four wrong there. So you've only got one more that you can get wrong.
Oh, man. Okay. Right. Trying to think of Ballon d'Or contenders and things like that. That's hard. Right. It's got to be Erling Haaland, surely.
Erling Haaland is number 21.
What?
I was very surprised at that. So you need a perfect run now. You've got what? One, two, three, four more to get. Can you get four without getting any wrong? I'm going to give you a little bit of a hint. There's two goalkeepers in there.
Right, okay. So Thibaut Courtois.
He is number nine.
Oh, God. Jan Oblak?
Oblak is number 20.
Oh, okay. Who's the other goalkeeper there?
Sadly,
not Neuer.
Number 10 is Manuel Neuer still. So Neuer is 90 rated, so is Courtois. Oblak is 89. Sorry, mate. You missed two Premier League players.
Okay. Go on, then. Put me out of my misery.
Mo Salah, number six.
Of course, yeah.
And number four, Kevin De Bruyne. Also 91 rated. So the top five are all 91 rated, and they are Benzema, Lewandowski, Mbappe, De Bruyne, and Messi. So it's going to be interesting to play FIFA again this year. I mean, I'll be honest, not a lot changed in the stats other than Messi and Ronaldo dropping off. And the funniest thing that I noticed was Harry Kane has been given 68 pace this year, which is very, very slow. So that's
generous,
an interesting one. But I've already pre-ordered it, I'll be honest. I feel like I sound like we've been sponsored by FIFA and we've got an advert. I wish, but no. I'm just a nerd and excited. But thanks for trying, mate.
I'm going to try and catch you out with some kind of quiz next time, mate. I think now you've sprung that one on me.
Let's do it.
On that note, that is the end of this week's podcast. Hopefully next week we've got a few more fixtures to talk about, depending on what circumstances arise. But whatever happens, we'll be here. Whatever subjects we've got to talk about, we'll find something. Yeah. Miles, thank you for your time, mate. And thank you for watching. Please do subscribe on YouTube if you can. Really would help with our channel's growth if you could. But until then, thank you, mate. See you soon.
Thanks, man. See ya.